Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of June, 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Ben Pruce will be here, too, from the Everly, Iowa facility that belongs to the Andersons to take a look at the cash grain market and, in particular, at the wet weather forecast that has made serious problems for producers in that area and the crops that are already in the ground. We'll get a on-the-ground condition report from him. And then as we make our way through the end of the day, we'll discuss the weather forecast for next week with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. Follow us on Twitter at Commodity Week or at David A. Dickey.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Friday afternoon. From the CME Group, the nearby contract and the soft red winter wheat for the day at $5.85 and a quarter. Settlement price down 8 and a quarter. That would be the July. The hard red July at $7.20 and 3 quarters, 8 and a half lower. July corn at $4.53 and a quarter, 2 and 3 quarters of a cent higher. September at $4.48 and a quarter, up 4 cents, and December corn at $4.52, 4 and a half higher. The March of 2015, $4.62 and a quarter, up 4 and a half cents, and May at $4.69, 4 and a quarter higher. July of next year at $4.75 and a half in the corn pit, up 4 and a quarter. July beans today, $14.15 and 3 quarters of a cent, a settlement price down a nickel. August down 7 and a half cents at $13.61 and a half, and September at $12.63 and a half, again today up a half cent. November beans up 4 and a quarter at $12.31 and a half, and January soybeans $12.38 and a quarter, up 4 for the afternoon. March contract at $12.44 and a quarter, up 3 and 3 quarters. And July of next year at $12.52 and 3 quarters, 2 and a half cents higher. Bean meal at $4.59.20, up $8. Bean oil at $40.13, down 48 cents. Live cattle in the August contract at $146.32 and a half cents, a finish down $1.15. October there, 22 and a half lower at $149.15. August feeders at $206.87 and a half, down 67 and a half cents. September at $208.17 and a half, down 40. And lean hogs finished the August at $129.15, down 60 cents. This is Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the afternoon. July contract, $107.26 a barrel, up 83 cents. Harbob gasoline at $3.12 and 4 tenths. That's just about unchanged. Ethanol at $2.09 and a tenth of a cent, up 4 and a half cents. And the spread between the two is $1.03 and 3 tenths of a cent wide. That's 4 and a half cents narrower than yesterday. Natural gas at $4.54 and a half cents, down 3 and 9 tenths of a cent. And diesel fuel for the day, down a tenth of a cent at $3.05 and a tenth. Gold futures finished $1,316.20 an ounce, up $2.50, and the dollar at 80.37. That's down 0.04 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. We should see some sunny skies, cloudy as well, 82 degrees for the high this afternoon. And then this evening, partly cloudy with a low of 67 degrees, a slight chance of thunderstorms tomorrow with a high of 88 degrees, and mostly cloudy on Saturday evening with a 67-degree low. Sunday, a 30% chance of rainfall, partly sunny, otherwise a high of 86. And Sunday night, a 30% chance of showers as well. A few thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, and a low of 68 degrees. On Monday, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny, a high of 86. Now through the rest of the week, Monday night, showers and thunderstorms and 68. Tuesday, showers and thunderstorms, otherwise partly sunny and 82. Tuesday night, showers, partly cloudy, a low of 63. And Wednesday, more showers, rainfall, thunderstorms, partly sunny, otherwise 80 degrees. Wednesday night, partly cloudy, rain disappears for a while, 60 degrees for the low on Wednesday night. Don't worry, those showers come back on Thursday. Thunderstorms too, mostly sunny, and a high of 81 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, right here in Urbana-Champaign.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. It is the 20th day of June, 2014. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us today, as usual, is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. When we talked this morning, Mike, we took a preview of what might come out from the USDA in terms of the cattle on feed numbers, and those figures were pretty neutral as I see them come across the wire services.
Yeah, I agree, Todd. I mean, the placements number at 93% was the big number, 1.912 for placed in May. On-feed numbers at 98, on-feed June 1, 98%. That compares with an average trade guess from Reuters at 98.4. And then the marketing's number, maybe the most negative of the three, but again, I wouldn't classify it too far outside the range of neutral. As you say, it came in at 96%, 1.865 million. I'm hearing that that might be the lowest on record for the marketings for that month, and trying to check that out, but didn't wasn't able to do that before the we went on air. But that compares on the average trade guess for the marketings of 95.7. So probably not a big reaction by the trade. I would suspect they're going to look instead at what the cash prices do as we get into the first of the week, because we have seen a real charge higher in the box beef market. At the same time, many of us in the analytical trade are thinking that the beef is going to lose out to pork come July 4th, and we're right in the midst of that buying right now and kind of on the tail end of it. So probably next week's cash market will be very, very important to how the cattle trade.
So it will be important to how the cattle trade. What do you expect out of the cash market next week?
I do feel as though that the beef prices are, and we talked about this last week, between the choice and the select and how the select is starting to catch up. I do feel like that the pork should be almost a no-brainer at the retail counter and when you go into restaurants. And so I do feel like that you probably have hit some highs for now, at least on the retail side. So I'm not looking at the fat cattle to be able to do much better than they have been doing here the last few weeks, and maybe no longer having the ability of the feeders to lead them higher. And I think this corresponds with some of the late week trade and how the feeder corn spread started to show a little bit of weakness and a reversal kind of attitude on its spread chart, in my opinion.
It says something when hogs, lean hogs, which are still at record high prices, they'll off their highs for the week, and their highs currently anyway, can be the leader, relatively speaking, in the meat case, other than the poultry, because beef prices are so darn high.
Yeah, and you look at the cattle hog ratio, and it's at 1.15 in lead month futures, and that's down near the lowest we've seen since 2012. And so you're getting, if you look at a five-year chart of that ratio, cattle in a ratio mindset are getting as discounted to the hogs as they've been in the last 5 years. It's kind of like how the ethanol looks to the RBOB. We talked about that this morning and how it was near a $1.05 discount to the RBOB. It's getting down in that same type of range as far as the ratio chart goes.
All right, turn your attention to the marketplace and what happened in Chicago and the grains and the oil seeds. Where do you want to start for the afternoon?
Gosh, it was a busy close. I guess the meal market would be the one we should start with because it had the most fireworks in it. We had a reversal in July meal on reported pretty heavy volume, Todd. The last 10 minutes of trade, we essentially went $21, $20.90 a ton in terms of a price range, and making most of that to the upside in the last 10 minutes. And so that by the end of the day, we had a 4.6% change in prices from low to high, nearly erased all of the week's losses on the close, but the settlement was quite a bit lower. One of the best daily moves that I could find on a lead month continuation chart since November of last year. So a really nice reversal type close on the daily chart. Weekly chart still left a little bit of a sell signal, and we did close lower on the week, but made up a lot of ground from that news about the Chinese DDGs.
Yeah, so the meal was leading thing; it led things higher. That posted a reversal up in the nearby July. And an outside up in the November beans then.
Yeah, the new crop did much better. I think you did have that El Nino reversal, so to speak. That bearish El Nino mindset was reversed by the late week because of the too much rain type of mindset and the idea that these crop conditions are, and this is where probably next week's trade for corn and beans are going to be really defined as far as the weekly trend, is the trade's going to really expect a much lower, or suspiciously, would be very suspicious if we didn't see a lower good to excellent number on both corn and beans given these heavy rains, especially in some of these key states. So that's one of the things that was nice to see in the meal market. And in the corn, we saw almost as much excitement in the ethanol market and in the RIN market. The RIN market in the last 2 days of trade was able to get up almost 50%. And this is on the idea that some traders are caught short that need to buy RINs, and they're needing to buy RINs because the excess demand or shortage of physical ethanol is present in the market, and they need to get the paper product to be able to offset what they can't get a hold of in the physical market. So the RIN market lit up today again, and that allowed the July ethanol to rally 2.2% in the futures. That kind of separated the corn from the wheat.
Am I right, or, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't remember how this happened exactly the last time around, but when the RINs take off like that, and we know that this is, I think, the case at the moment. Last week we had a EIA number said, hey, we had the best week since 2011 for production of ethanol in terms of total number of barrels. But when the RINs take off, that's part and parcel of exporting ethanol. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is whether it's domestic demand, and we're looking at 60 cents difference between E85 and regular gas, but you hit it. Between domestic demand or export demand, it really says when those RINs take off to the market, the perception would be that there is a very tight physical market, and that those that trade ethanol, if they can't get a hold of the physicals, they've got to get those RINs to be able to meet the EPA requirements.
All right. What else do we have in the marketplace you wanted to make sure we discussed today?
Well, we did see the soft red wheat try and go higher on the week, but we could not go above the last 6 weeks' trend, and so we closed a seventh week lower by my calculation. July soft red wheat down 0.75 cents the way I looked at the settlement. So that was a little bit disappointing. Made sense because some of the quality issues in the soft red wheat are getting more and more of the market's attention.
Yeah, July was down 0.75 cents, you're correct. And the hard red was off 7.5 cents. That's despite rough weather for drought and then for rainfall and trying to get a not such good crop out of the field. So we'll see how it all ends up. Thank you so much for taking the time with us. We do appreciate that.
Have a great weekend, sir.
You too. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Joins us here on the closing market report for this Friday afternoon. You can always hear him again if you'd like on our website. That's at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Hey, don't forget, if you can't find us on the radio stations or on the web at willag.org, you can always do this, 217-333-3434 at about 10:15 and 3:15 each and every business day. We post our agricultural programming just to voicemail, and you can listen to it there with some of the numbers and a bit of analysis.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Agricultural programming is a production of Illinois Public Media. Here's today's agricultural news. During a House Agriculture Subcommittee hearing yesterday on the applicability of the Clean Water Act on ag practices, Ag Undersecretary for Natural Resources and Environment Robert Bonney maintained conservation practices under the interpretive rule are still voluntary, according to the Hagstrom report. However, Subcommittee Chair Glenn Thompson said the standards have gone from voluntary to compulsory. Thompson says if farmers and ranchers don't want to face the consequences, fees, and interruptions of the Clean Water Act, it is compulsory. House Ag Subcommittee Ranking Member Colin Peterson says his experience with his constituents is that the Army Corps of Engineers has gone off the reservation. On the one hand, Bonnie says it's clear the waters of the U.S. issue has been of deep concern for agriculture, but he says the number of exemptions has been increased through a voluntary basis. So the hope is it will be accepted as the opportunity it is. Well, demand for U.S. protein looks pretty good. According to Meeting Place, BB&T Capital Markets analyst Heather Jones reports protein producers should see continued strong export and domestic demand for their products, despite historically high prices. Jones says there has been an upsurge in protein consumption in the American diet over the past several years. Also, pork and beef exports have increased 5.3% so far this year compared to 1 year ago. For 2015, Jones expects export demand will increase further if pork and chicken supplies show meaningful gains. She says the demand prospects look positive for U.S. protein producers because key export market competitors are struggling with either tight supplies or disease. And finally today, this story, following Chipotle's official statement regarding plans to import Australian grass-fed beef as part of its Food with Integrity and Responsibility Raise Beef standards, U.S. cattle producers and industry leaders have taken a stand and are speaking up, according to Drovers. Earlier this week, Texas Ag Commissioner Todd Stables wrote a letter to Chipotle founder Steve Ells that says Stables is shocked by the company's decision to start serving meat that's been shipped in from more than 8,000 miles away. Stables says he was dismayed by Chipotle's misguided and irresponsible, those are his words, declaration that the Australian meat is somehow more responsibly raised than meat produced in the United States. Two California ranchers, organic beef producer Daryl Wood and conventional beef producer Daryl Sweet, have spoken out on the Facts About Beef blog about their different methods and how the environment dictates the practices they can use. Wood has summer and winter pasture available for his operation, but Sweet says his pastures are only green 6 months out of the year. If he were to produce grass-fed beef, Sweet says he would have to either cut his herd size in half or stock feed accordingly when the grass is dry. Either way, he says it would ultimately lead to the end of his fifth-generation farm. Wood says he would love for Mr. Ells to call or visit his ranch to learn more about how beef is raised and discuss his options for providing responsibly raised beef to Chipotle consumers and their restaurants. Steve Ells, by the way, is a native of Indianapolis, Indiana. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Well, it's hot outside, and as we move into the summer months and farmers begin to wrap up their field operations, they turn their attention to cleaning out their bins. The hope is to fill them, of course, with new crop corn, and that looks like a pretty good option for the fall. I'll have more in a moment on some safety reminders about what you should and should not do as you clean out corn bins. Flowing grain can kill a man in just a few seconds. University of Illinois agricultural engineer Bob Aharon, a safety specialist, says it is terribly dangerous to enter a grain bin when the augers are running and the grain is moving.
One of the things we need to really try to avoid is going into the bin when the grain is flowing out of the bin because of the significant risk that's involved when there's a tremendous amount of force in that center where the grain is moving through the bin to the bottom, to the unloading auger at the bottom of the bin. And it only takes about 2 to 4 seconds before the grain is above your knees. And at that point, you're trapped to the point you cannot get out yourself. And it only takes about 12 to 20 seconds, depending on how fast the augers are moving, to completely engulf the person.
The risk is traumatic, and Aharon says those believing they can simply crawl or swim out of the tide are deadly wrong.
When you go under grain, there's a tremendous amount of pressure around the body. Most people, scream or yelling, you get grain in your throat, and so it doesn't take long to suffocate. And a lot of people don't do this, but it's when you go in a grain bin, it's very important where there's more than 6 feet of grain to wear a harness and a safety rope so as to keep and be set up in such a way that it keeps you from falling more than a foot or two if you happen to fall through a cavity or start to get pulled under because somebody maybe inadvertently turns on the grain, augers the grain out of the bin. So as that lifeline and harness will protect you from going under the grain.
Heron says he knows farmers and others will enter the grain bins to break up, quote, the bridges that have formed over the year. The auger should be off when that happens, and the bridge should be below head high, meaning if there is good grain to stand on and the bridge is above that but below head high and the augers are off, then it is safer to break it up.
Closing Market Report, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason on the phone line, hailing from Everly, Iowa, at the Andersons facility. There is Ben Proust to take a look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Ben.
Afternoon, Todd.
Well, are you busy there or just quiet?
Yeah, well, you got to be careful using that hailing word. We've been seeing quite a bit of that here lately.
Well, between that and the rainfall, what do the crops look like?
Obviously the bottoms have kind of flooded out. Creeks have come out of their banks and stuff like that. But honestly, we're a couple, 2-3 days without any significant rainfall, and that's really kind of cleared up. And other than that, it's a bright, sunshiny day here, and honestly, our crops still look really, really good.
Now, you are south of the Iowa-Minnesota border by about 20 miles.
Yep.
I've heard that southern Minnesota is the place where most of the rainfall has come, and that was the case last year when they had all the prevent plant as well. Are they in worse condition, do you think?
I don't think so. Last year it was just unrelenting. At least they're getting a few breaks in between, and you know, it just takes time to pump all that water away.
Yeah, but, I meant worse condition than you, not than last year. Have they had more rainfall than you have this year?
Yes. They, I think Interstate 90 is still closed up here right now, so just takes time, I guess.
Oh, gosh, I didn't realize Interstate 90 is closed? Wow.
Yeah, they closed it just east of Sioux Falls. We came back in on Sunday, and they were cleaning up the last logs off the road, and with this last batch of rains here, I think it's still closed just to concerns and want to check integrity of the road.
Holy smokers. Okay, well, let's skip beyond that and then take a look at what's happening in the marketplace. You have had troubles getting locomotives to move corn, at least the ethanol plants have had trouble getting locomotives to move ethanol. Is that getting better or not?
It's starting to feel like that's clearing up a little bit. The railroads are starting to dedicate some power, and actually we're starting to get some ethanol cars moved, and all of a sudden, I always reference the Valero plant just to the west of us, 7 miles, and their appetite for corn is starting to grow.
Oh,
so that tells us it's clearing up.
I bet they are ramping up. Are their bids in that same form then? Are they pushing to get corn in?
A little bit. You know, she's the buyer over there. She's carefully scaling in, but, she just bumped up her bids. Even from last night, she bumped in another 4 cents to, I think she's 17 under here for June.
And where are you guys at the elevator then?
We're posted at 23 under here today.
How about for soybeans?
We are 25 under.
Okay. Hey, thanks so much. Any final word from you?
Not here today, Todd. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks so much, Ben. That is good. Thanks. Ben Proust of the Andersons. He's at their Everly, Iowa facility. Joins us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Don't forget to stay with us for Commodity Week. That starts at 2:36 if you can on the web, but about 4 o'clock this afternoon at willag.org. Our guest today, Ed Ussett of University of Minnesota.
It's National Vanilla Milkshake Day. The milkshake, as first defined in 1885, was an alcoholic whiskey drink containing eggs. It was not until the turn of the 20th century that milkshakes became wholesome drinks made with ice cream. By the way, the history of the electric blender and milkshake are interconnected. Before the widespread availability of electric blenders, milkshakes were more like eggnog. On this day in agricultural history in 1861, Sir Frederick Gowland Hopkins was born. He discovered what we now call vitamins, essential nutrients needed to maintain health. Hopkins fed young rats a basic diet containing salts and a purified mixture of lard and starch. After some time, Hopkins observed the animals stopped growing. The addition of milk to the lard and starch diet induced growth. In 1920, Dmitry Ivanovsky died, a Russian microbiologist. He was the first to identify the characteristics of organisms that later were named viruses. Ivanovsky was commissioned in 1890 to study a mysterious disease that was killing tobacco crops. He determined that something in the sap transferred the disease from plant to plant. And after more research, he concluded an invisible parasite was the culprit. And in 1977, the Trans-Alaska oil pipeline fully opened. It takes oil 38 days to travel 800 miles from the oil fields to the port of Valdez. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This agricultural programming is a production of Illinois Public Media. Now here's Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute's Jim Angel with today's weather forecast.
The statewide average temperature for June so far is 71 degrees, and that's 0.4 degrees above average. The statewide average rainfall is 4 inches, which is just shy of the average June rainfall of 4.2 inches. Amounts of 5 to 9 inches were common across the state. The highest total so far is 9.89 inches at Dixon, Illinois. The National Weather Service released their latest monthly and seasonal outlooks. For Illinois, we have nearly equal chances of above, below and near average temperatures and precipitation over the next 3 months. In other words, there is not much of an increased risk for droughts or floods or heat or cold at this time. However, the northern Corn Belt could be saddled with increased chances of below average temperatures for this summer, including the Dakotas, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. The National Weather Service forecast for this weekend and next week could be summarized as warm, humid, with a chance of rain nearly every day. Highs on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday will range from the low 80s in the north to the low 90s in the far south. Temperatures will be moderate later in the week, with highs on Tuesday through Thursday in the 70s in the north and in the mid-80s in the south. There is a chance of rain every day. Rainfall totals could be heavy at times with potential amounts of 2 to 4 inches. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Our thanks to Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute. Here the way the numbers finished in Chicago for the week. On the trade, Friday to Friday, corn posted a reversal up in the nearby July contract. The high at $4.53¾ for the week. The low at $4.35½. July settled 6¼ cents higher at $4.53¼. December corn at $4.52, up 4½ cents Friday to Friday. In the soy complex, a reversal up in the nearby July at $14.15¾, a dime higher. The top at $14.35½ for the week, the low at $13.93½. And the November contract or new crop soybeans posted an outside up at $12.31½. That was a dime and a quarter higher. July bean meal at $4.59.20, down $8.70. July bean oil at $40.13, up 44. Wheat futures finished the soft red July at $5.85¼, down 0.75 cents, topped out at $5.98 for the week and bottomed at $5.76¾. And the hard red winter wheat in the July at $7.20¾ cents, finished 7½ cents higher. August live cattle at $146.32½, finished down 30 cents. August feeders at $206.87½ per 100 pounds, $1.27½ lower on the week. Friday to Friday closes. And the lean hogs at $129.15, also in the August contract, finished $2.12½ lower. And that's a look at the numbers and the weekly changes from the CME Group in Chicago.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.